Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Greetings, nerds. This is Cena Nerd. I'm your host, Sarah Belmont, and with me, as always, is our Mr. Producer, Will Polk. How are you doing today, Will?
Doing very well, Sarah. Survived the 100-degree-plus day taking my daughter to summer camp, but this heat wave here in the is just brutal. But
What was it yesterday?
100.
And you went to a movie theater?
Yeah, I went to a movie theater. I did. I had to. Well, actually, it's funny. It was one of those rare afternoons where it seemed like it was going to thunder and it just kept and get a big rain shower, but it never did anything. But it did do something somewhere because it cooled off. But yeah, it's just been brutal here in the South and a lot of other places around the U.S. as well.
Well, I mean, even Alaska has been insanely hot over the summer. Like I know, like it's apples and oranges when you say 100, and I'm like, it was 90. Still,
yeah, you're probably dying up there.
it feels like it's 100.
Yeah.
So it is interesting, but I still like your decision making. I'm gonna go to a movie theater where I'm gonna sweat with a bunch of other people and watch Lion King, which is about takes place in a desert.
So
it feels just warm watching it.
Actually, it did. They had the AC like cranked up like to the max, so it was like,
of course,
damn,
they did.
I should have like brought a sweater.
Of course they did. That is really funny how strategic you have to be in dressing to go to a movie theater, because you're like, especially these days with movies being over two, like a normal movie these days are now 2.5 hours.
Yep, exactly.
And those are the films we're paying to see. And so now it's kind of like, do I bring the sweater? Will I be cold? Do I not bring the sweater? Because I don't want to be hot because that's just uncomfortable.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah. But it's just, I guess given that, you know, as you said, the movie was set in Sahara, Africa, but you know, it's, it definitely the outside temperature definitely helped set the mood when you're watching that film. But I have to say I actually enjoyed it. It was I know the critics were, you know, panned it, but it did pretty well this weekend. It made $185 million.
The Lion King.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can all agree that is one of the, if not the most beloved Disney movie that they've ever made. So you do the same story, but with 21st century special effects. And of course, you're going to make a good opening weekend.
Yep.
They probably could have been done better had they not dropped it right during Comic-Con.
Probably.
But that's just my thinking. However, at the same time, they're not really there for like the nerdy, more grown up, but still young at heart, as I like to say.
Yeah.
Crowd. It's more for the kids. It's more for
it
the kids.
For the
I
kids.
Mean, this is their story. I don't think I'm going to go see it because I have not seen... I really don't think I've gone to any of their live action retellings, and I don't know why. I honestly cannot tell you why. Because I grew up with those movies too, and I love them too, and I remember rewatching certain ones until like the videotape was going to break. But I just for some reason you gloss it up and I'm like, I know the story. I don't really have a reason.
Yeah. See, so here's my thing. And I'm like you. I've seen most of these in the original animated format. I'm not one of these folks who are just like such a purist about Disney films that I'm going to automatically, you know, just shut down and say, no, it's got to be the original or else. I really went into Lion King with an open mind. I haven't watched it in years, probably since as my kids have gotten older. You know, of course it was on a loop when they were younger, but, it was one of those things where I went in open-minded and with no like allegiance to the original. And I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was an enjoyable film. I think I did tweet out yesterday after I got back that it is disconcerting to see the CGI animals talking and having emotions. it is. I will not deny it. It did take me out of it for a little bit. It took a while to get used to that, but once I did, I enjoyed it for what it is. And I thought Jon Favreau, you know, given that he was directing a CGI animated film, did very well. My only complaint is that I think Beyonce like did her Beyonce thing of over singing and a few times drowned out Donald Glover, which I thought was unfortunate. But even and I will say that I will say a purist to Elton John's Can You Feel the Love Tonight, those were my main quibbles. But overall, I thought it was an enjoyable film.
Yeah, you know, interesting enough, I've heard similar remarks about Aladdin, where Naomi Scott is a better singer than the actor who played Aladdin. So it kind of was like very apparent in the movie, like somebody's classically trained and somebody isn't.
Yeah.
and which is interesting to me because it's like it's becoming this new thing where we are getting more musicals or we tend to do cast people who are singers who have made albums, sold out concerts and all of that are classically trained. And then we pair them with a lead who brings the acting, but it's bizarre to me. I don't know where I'm going with this, Will. Help me.
No, I mean, it's a very fair point. But, you know, the thing is, Donald Glover has a very nice voice in it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's, you know, with his alter ego, Childish Gambino, but also just in general. And so I think it's just part of that was just, I think when they were scoring the film, I think maybe, you know, who's going to mess with a diva? and the modern day queen of Beyonce and tell her to dial it back a bit. So,
and then I guess the point is if you're going to cast Beyonce, if she brings a lot to the table, a huge fan base, a huge name, a huge brand, yet she's also going to drown out everybody else. I mean, when you look at that cast, it's ironic to me that the first name that comes to mind when talking about that cast is Beyonce and not Donald Glover.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And yet really he should be the one we think of, but we don't because Beyonce is part of the cast.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So
kind of like with A Star Is Born, how everybody thinks of that as Lady Gaga's movie. That is so Bradley Cooper's movie. He wrote and directed it.
Yep.
Like, well, he adapted a screenplay, but still.
Still.
He did a lot for that movie and acted in it, and yet we all just think of her and that one song.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It really, you're right. It is a double-edged sword with when you bring in a named talent like a Beyonce or a Lady Gaga to pair with a traditional actor. And I think obviously they are banking on the fact that you are bringing this very popular singer to get butts in the seats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have no good segue for this, so I'm just going to call you out. Why did you put Mr. Robot on this rundown?
Why did I put Mr. Robot? Because we finally got our first teaser this week. Yes, I know it's very random. It's very random. It was a lot, you know, obviously there was this little thing in San Diego that was going on, and basically all the oxygen in the room has been taken up by it, but... Yeah, we got us a trailer for Mr. Robot this week. That show is coming back in the fall, and I just threw it out there just as a news item that I know a lot of our listeners enjoy that show and like to know what's going on with it. So that's why I put it there.
So what you're really telling me is you're the perfect person to sit next to during an airplane. Because if the airplane would ever go down, you would be happy to share oxygen.
I would be. I would be. I am there. I am there for you. I am there for you.
So the teaser, I did see it. I didn't ignore it. I didn't think that much of it. However, it did really remind me. I have not watched an episode of Mr. Robot in a very long time.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
Yet I do appreciate, because even though I haven't watched it in a very long time, even though I'm going through like some separation anxiety with the show, because there was a time when I was really obsessed with it, i.e. season one. It is like this short little teaser reminds you of... They literally have taken their hero, who I remember watching the trailer for season one, and they claimed like it was more that Elliot was a vigilante. He was using his skills with hacking to try to defeat E-Corp. Well, now we're being shown that this last season is really proving how along the way, Elliot has become the bad guy, and he's hurt a lot of people along the way to get to where he is and to do what he needed to do. And of course, he has this multi-personality issue that he's also dealing with too. So like when we say Elliot, you've hurt a lot of people, who are we really talking about? Because if you have multiple personalities, well, is it the Elliot we met in season one, or is it somebody else, or is it somebody that we've seen along the way?
Right. Yeah. I had a very similar take when I saw that trailer, and I thought it definitely reminded me of, one, how much I love the show. Two, I do need to do a rewatch before season four starts. And three, man, they just been torturing us as far as these breaks in between. And I think it's a good thing that the show is as solid as it is, because there's a lot of good tension and buildup that, quite frankly, kind of gets lost, and that momentum gets lost with this long break. So I think a rewatch is definitely in order.
Yeah, at least for season one. I mean, we know what happened. Sam Esmail had to go off and do Homecoming, right, which is on Amazon. Really good show, really interesting. It did kind of...
It got snubbed.
What?
I said it got snubbed in the Emmys.
A lot of things get snubbed in the Emmys, because yeah. I've given up on the Emmys ever since they nominated Millie Bobby Brown for something. I'm like, what? Yeah, why? Yeah. That doesn't make any sense to me. So it's more of a popular show these days than anything, popular vote. And they also nominated Game of Thrones, which is the biggest show on TV, or was on TV. So they just won viewers, I guess.
I guess so.
And we're completely derailed. Thank you, Will. I don't even know what we're talking about. Yeah, he went off to do Homecoming. You know, it's fine. Let's move on to something else.
Well, I think the something else is something that we've been talking about and wondering when it was going to happen, and it happened. Down goes Avatar by $500,000.
Yeah.
So, in game, enjoy holding the belt.
Even though you did a re-release to get it. I guess Avatar did. That's what came out when they did their re-release, is that Avatar did the same thing way back when. It didn't need to, but I think it wanted to because of Oscar season or something. I don't really remember what the reasoning was.
Yeah, because I think it had already, like, if I recall, I think it had already eclipsed its the box office championship anyway. But maybe they were just adding to it. But how appropriate for Endgame to take over the top of the box office rankings on the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con.
Well, why is that? Why would you say that?
Oh, I don't know. There was just, some little bit of things that dropped this weekend. You know, a show or two, a confirmation or two.
So I think it was really interesting to watch Twitter leading up to the big announcement of Marvel, because everybody going into it, I felt like, had already committed themselves that they were going to get, like, they had already resigned themselves to low expectations, because I saw a lot of tweets like, yes, we're going to get some major announcements, but don't be surprised if they just focus on TV. And then as the titles start dropping, everybody started to really get excited, and it was interesting because it's literally a mix of both TV and also new movies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of TV shows we already knew were in the works, and a lot of movies we already knew were in the works, and then a few surprises here and there. All right, so essentially, Kevin Feige went out and did the big Marvel announcement, and it lasted the full hour, which I thought was really impressive considering I'm used to Comic-Con having so much buildup and for it to last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But it lasted for over an hour, and how I know that is because I was updating Twitter by minute by minute. So I know when it started and I know when it finished. So which it's interesting how they held back on Black Widow. Mm-hmm. That was one of the titles that a lot of people were already inserting into some of the dates that Kevin Feige exposed. He's going to have 10 announcements. And so we figured, but he held back and he kind of waited towards the end to make that confirmation. And that actually in May 2020, we're going to get the Black Widow movie, which will include David Harbour to play Red Guardian. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Did not expect that. It's going to take place after Civil War.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yes. Yes. I think actually we chewed on this and we were hoping that it would be at that point in time, because yeah, if it had gone back anything before then, it would not have worked, quite frankly. And it may not work. I don't know. I mean, I'm on the fence on this one.
What do you mean?
So we obviously, if you've watched Endgame, spoiler alert, this character meets her fate in that film. And so it's, Black Widow has always been one of those characters that I think was always a very integral part of the team, and thought that she was very critical to helping, for example, Captain America and Winter Soldier, and it was a very strong supporting character and a supporting player, but I think it was, and maybe it's in a group of superheroes, she was kind of the outlier.
Okay.
And so she basically stands up and is basically having to fight a character, basically Red Guardian, who's the Soviet or Russian version of Captain America. So.
Well, remember, the real villain in this movie is not Red Guardian, it's Taskmaster.
Right. Right. And who's someone who, Taskmaster, if I recall, is someone who basically has mimic and the fighting styles of the other people. So, I mean, basically her fighting against someone who's going to be very much like her. So I guess Red Guardian will be sort of that X factor again that will help Black Widow defeat him.
Right. I don't know how exactly it'll all work, But, and I kind of understand where you're coming from because of what happened to her in Endgame, and that this is, that we're going to be basically shown what happens, where she goes after Civil War, and how she reunites with Steve Rogers, because he's not going to, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see a cameo. I don't know. Or it's maybe possible. There's some kind of, because really that's when they confirmed that it was Civil War. It's like, okay, so this is going to be right, also right before she goes renegade and decides to join him in what he's doing before Infinity War. So there's a gap of time here that we're going to get explored. And really what sold me, in all honesty, Will, was when I read a quote by Kevin Feige. Okay. There's a method to this madness. He has a plan. And so he knows he needs this film to do something to launch the next phase. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, we've all been here. Marvel's not a perfect franchise, but sometimes you just gotta, in Feige we trust.
In Feige we trust. You know, hopefully it doesn't, my concern is it's gonna end up like a Thor Dark World.
Which could happen, because they literally made Thor Dark World. You don't know, which did have a payoff in Endgame. So even if it does, you could get it paid off in a few movies from now. Who knows?
Yeah.
Moving on. So later that same year, we're going to get The Eternals, November 2020. So they're doing their favorite months now. They're resuming, they're ushering us in, because in years past, commonly these films have dropped in May and November, and then a few odd months too. But we got Richard Madden cast, Selma Hayek, and Angelina Jolie, just named a few. They got Angelina Jolie.
They did.
And I didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah, it's been rumored. And of course, a few weeks ago, Selma Hayek's name came out. The person who was rumored to be in this film, Keanu Reeves, apparently, so far, has not been cast that we know of. But The Eternals, you know, so this is one of those films that, and this is where the MCU has really done well, in that it has taken obscure characters from the comic books and basically building on them and making it, you know, making it basically a franchise off of that. And, and so, this could, obviously it's got a solid cast. And as we talked about a few weeks ago, just looking at some of the casting decisions, that have been made and cast that, people who are now interested in these films. I mean, you're getting A-list solid actors like Angelina Jolie. I mean, holy Angelina effing Jolie. So.
The queen, like we were talking about Beyonce as a queen. Angelina Jolie is a princess, if not the queen now of Hollywood. Like she is just that person. And however, in thinking about it, thinking about what this movie could be, she's great casting. Her essence, like, just evokes that kind of, like, otherworldly being.
I mean, I was watching Maleficent 2 trailer last night with The Lion King. And, yeah, I mean, she's totally fits this the Eternals and this story of, like, these beings who basically are just where, at least in the comic book context, you know, Icarus, you know, it's basically the daughter of Zeus, or Zeus in the comic. And so, yeah, so it, she can carry that. But my concern with this film is, could it end up being the film version of the Inhumans?
Or, see, my concern is that this could either be our new Guardians franchise, because it does have that family element, that group of people who are, like, it's not a one person movie. It's a multiple cast movie. It's not just about one person. It's about a few different people. Or could it be Thor the Dark World? Because a lot of similar themes we got going on here. A lot of gods versus God. Yeah, it's just, it's like, it could be one or the other.
It could
could be in humans. I mean, a lot of people, I've seen people point out, like, hey, when Feige released this late in 2014, Inhumans was there, and then that became a TV show. And so I understand the concern, and it could. However, you really think Angelina Jolie is going to read that script?
Yeah.
And sign on, like, she confirmed it. She has read the script, or she wouldn't be doing the movie. So she knows what it could be.
Yeah.
Now, special effects.
Yeah.
But, you know, they just made, seriously, over $3 billion this year between Captain Marvel and the Avengers Endgame. Mm-hmm. So they really shouldn't be holding back on spending too much money on special effects.
Well, I think it's that, and I think just, you know, having believable special effects, you know, because these are essentially, these are gods that we're dealing with here, and so they really have to bring their A game when it comes to that, as you said.
Yeah, and I mean, Feige wasn't behind what ended up happening to the Inhumans. That was Perlmutter.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so then we get our first TV confirmation, the Falcon and Winter Soldier, because you know what? This is really just, we love these two. Mm-hmm. Like, they just, Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan are just the bromance that I don't know what it does to the MCU. Like, I don't know if it's just a small cube, if it's a medium sized cube in building the foundation that is the MCU, but it's definitely holding some part of it up.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you're right. Their chemistry is just, it just explodes on the screen when they're together in scenes. And, I am definitely looking forward to this when it, will be on the, I guess, new Disney Plus platform. This is one of those things that, I'll fork out some money for that. And also I think just seeing this story, I mean, there's not been too many details that's been released, but I think it does take place after Endgame. So the name could be Falcon and Winter Soldier. It's just something people are familiar with, but really it's just going to be the new Captain America and White Wolf show.
Yeah. And if only they can just borrow Tom Holland for maybe a 5-minute scene, mm-hmm. because you think that Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan are great together just by themselves. And then you add in Tom Holland and my God.
I'm thinking about Civil War right now as you talk about that.
It's the mother load, okay?
Yeah.
The mother load. That's the what if series I want to see. Oh, man. All right. And then we go into 2021. Mm-hmm. And this was the first announcement that I'm sure everybody was like, did not see that coming. Did not see that coming. They confirmed in February 2021, we will get Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And it will feature, in fact, the real Mandarin. But more importantly, it will feature Awkwafina.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that this morning, I randomly watched the actual announcement footage for this movie, and having the actor, and forgive me, I don't know his name off the top of my head, come out on the stage and speak in Chinese immediately. That was very impressive. And I was like, dude, you know, you got that star power. This is gonna be good. And it just, and then he switched into talking about how he was just cast on Tuesday. He, like, this is a world win for him. And I was like, this is great. This proves that sometimes you don't always need that A-lister to come out on stage and really speak to the crowds, because it's just as refreshing to realize that you know, any day one of us can get a call from Marvel.
Yeah. I know as you were, one of our followers in Canada tweeted to us at Lillian Sue. She mentioned how he's very well known in Canada as far as a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation show called Kim's Convenience. Mm-hmm. And so, so I know that's a big draw there. Also, he kind of joked, I saw this tweet, he was joking how, and he has sent tweets to Marvel Studios in the past saying, Hey, look at me. Time for you guys to cast me in your next film. And I think his last one was maybe back in December. And then here we are, in July, he actually gets cast for Shang-Chi. And the other thing too, and I think this, how Black Panther was a very culturally significant film for the MCU, and it just transcended comic books. I mean, when you think about all the people that, normally don't really go to these films, Black Panther brought those people into the fold. And, as far as audiences that normally don't get into comic book movies. And I think this one might have that same potential.
Yeah. And, I'm sure Kevin Feige is already writing his thank you letter to Crazy Rich Asians, which kind of launched this, hey guys, there's another part of America or part of our culture that we need to recognize and bring to the fold. And hey, they buy movie tickets too. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Exactly.
And it's rich. I had the same thing. I was thinking about how I'm really looking forward to this trailer because we've already talked about Mulan's trailer, but I love that trailer too.
I did too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're ready for this and yep. It's just following suit. It makes a lot of sense. Really fixing, and it's also a movie that is fixing a lot of wrongs because of what has happened with the Mandarin. And then you realize that all those Easter eggs that some of us were thinking about, are actually real Easter eggs and are going to come to fruition now the right way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is what Kevin Feige does. He's a maestro and he's just waiting to pull the right strings at the right time.
Exactly.
Then again, this is really interesting how they go from movie, TV, because that same spring, we're also going to get another mini series with WandaVision. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take place right after Endgame. Thank God.
Yes.
I heard the rumors about it being in the 60s or something, and it's kind of like WTF.
Yeah. I remember hearing those as well. And I'm just like, okay, how's this going to work? Because, I mean, really, didn't Captain Marvel kind of set the prequel for the... Yeah, so I am glad that it's after Endgame. I'm interested, obviously, to see how they how they bring back Vision, because Vision was not a victim of the snap or the blip.
The blip.
And so so how does, given that Vision was created from one of the Infinity Stones and also Tony Stark's computer program, Jarvis, how does he come back? So I guess will we have some funky timeline stuff going on here that, we do now know that the multiverse has been established. So
it hasn't yet, but we'll get to that. Two words for you, Steve Rogers. Mm. Steve Rogers got his happy ending.
Yes. So you think,
did he do anything? Because it's also interesting that you bring it up that this announcement and this show will occur before the What If series, before the Loki series, before a few others that we're going to talk about.
Right.
So I don't know, but Steve.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the multiverse was teased in Endgame, brought up again, and, Spider-Man Far From Home, but I think your theory about Steve having some involvement makes sense because, obviously he was there when Vision was killed by Thanos and, saw the impact that he knows the special relationship that Wanda and Vision did have.
Yeah. And the takeaway I or what I took away from this announcement too, was we're going to get Monica Rambeau back, a grown up version of her, tie into Captain Marvel. We all knew that was coming, and we were figuring like, hey, she's probably going to be older if you fast forward to where we are now in the MCU. Right. So I like it. I like these little, like, there's Easter eggs within, or there's announcements within announcements, things that I didn't think about. But it's going to work. And right after that, they will then drop the Loki series, which will be the alternate timeline miniseries that we all guessed when we saw Endgame. As soon as we saw it, we were like, oh, now the Loki series makes a lot more sense.
Yep, it does. It does.
And I'm just going to skip over that one because that isn't important. The important one comes after, which I admit, never seen the first Doctor Strange movie in a theater. I'm going to go see this one, though, because they announced May 2021, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
Will, like, did your brain explode? Did it you did. Go mad?
It went mad. It went completely mad. I'm still, like, recovering from seeing that title, because I think I was one of, whenever I got back from the movie last night, I was like, oh, I think that was the first tweet I saw from you, and I was just like, holy shit.
So what does this mean? Like, what does that mean is going to happen?
I think, so we've been teased with this multiverse, first in Endgame. Quentin Beck talks about it in Far From Home, but of course, people probably may have dismissed it because of all the illusions and everything that Mysterio created. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think this will indeed confirm that. And again, as you rightly pointed out with how this universe works, every little throwaway line in these movies and soon to be TV shows has meaning. Mm-hmm. And so when we saw Loki walk away with the Tesseract briefcase and in the game, that definitely will obviously have some impacts moving forward in this new world that we have in the next century, or not next decade, as far as in the MCU. And so there's that. There's the things that happen in Endgame, other things that happen in Endgame as far as Thanos, you know, manipulating the timeline, with Nova, you know, with her piece. Clearly, these other series that we're, you know, as you rightly pointed out, the ones that happen after Endgame will, further show us the multiverse. I mean, the Eternals, I'm sure, has some role in that too. So, I think this is the film that will finally confirm all these things that have been teased up to this point.
Yeah. I just really love that on top of that, they also announced that Scarlet Witch will be in this movie. And good for Elizabeth Olsen. I mean, who could have seen it coming with how well Age of Ultron went? I'm sure she wasn't everybody's favorite character coming out of that movie, but she has certainly made her presence wanted, especially in Infinity War. I mean, she was one of the best characters in that movie, for me at least.
Me too.
And I think this, it's, it's interesting how many M's are in the title of this movie, because my mind immediately was like, well, House of M, if you will. Interesting. Maybe this is how we end up getting the mutants. I don't know. So I like this pairing. I'm very interested in this movie. They did also make it clear that it's going to be a horror movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody, let's lower back down these expectations, because I'm pretty sure that a lot of people were saying the first Doctor Strange was going to be a horror movie. So I don't know what the MCU's definition of horror is anymore. Okay. So yeah. I would take it with a grain of salt because I mean, we are going to end up, or I'm not going to, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to go see It Chapter 2, which is a horror movie. And so you shouldn't go into, after seeing that movie, you shouldn't go into this movie thinking like, oh, it's that's not a. And then that same year in the summer, they are going to drop a What If animated series with Jeffrey Wright, who's going to play the Watcher. They've already confirmed a lot of actors. Mm-hmm. I think I saw Michael B. Jordan's photo on that wall.
I think, yeah. I think you're right. And there's other people who have committed their voice talent to this as well. And this is great. The What If is something that harkens back to the comics where you had what if Spider-Man was a member of the Fantastic Four, or what if, you know, fill in the blank. So I'm really excited for this series too, because it definitely gets us not only again builds on the whole concept of the multiverse, and in this regard we get it in the What If series.
Mm-hmm. Then later that fall we're going to get another mini series with Hawkeye, and this will be set his 5 years spent as Ronin. Yep. So we're going to see that circle. So it's kind of going to mirror the Black Widow movie, where there's going to be this, we know there's a missing piece of time that's going to get explored with this one character.
Right.
And more importantly, Kate Bishop will appear and be a co-lead or a leading character, significant character in the series, which awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, I know that. Whenever we saw the teasers for Endgame, people thought that Kate Bishop was going to appear there, but it turned out that was just Clint's daughter. But but this is one of those shows that it is, if it follows the comic, Kate Bishop basically becomes Hawkeye, and so it will chronicle his years as Ronin, but also will be that mentor-mentee relationship too. So this has a lot of potential.
Yeah. And then they drop the hammer, literally, and confirm Thor Love and Thunder is coming November 5th, 2021. That is not a made-up title, even though I'm pretty sure a lot of us initially thought it was going to be a made-up title, and then they were going to announce something else. Nope, that is going to be the title of the movie.
Yep.
And Natalie Portman will return, not only as Jane Foster, but also as Thor, the goddess of thunder.
Mm-hmm.
See, this one is where I'm kind of on the fence.
Okay.
I love Ragnarok. I love the team. They brought off the team that I brought out the team I love coming back for this movie. Chris Hemsworth, I don't know when he'll stop playing Thor, but hopefully it's not anytime soon because he has the character down now.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever really wanted to see Jane Foster come back though. And even if she is going to be a superhero, I don't really know if that's what I wanted or needed.
Yeah. I think folks, whenever they thought of Thor 4, I think many folks thought that Tessa Thompson's character, Valkyrie, would be a likely candidate to wield the hammer. But this follows the comics. I mean, Jane Foster did become Thor in the comic book. So we are pulling from directly from source material. And I guess I see your point as far as Jane wary of her being Thor. I don't know if it's Natalie Portman's portrayal of the character or just how the character's been developed in these films, but I can definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah, it was odd because a lot of people looking back, why some of those first two movies arguably didn't work was because Thor and Jane didn't have any chemistry, mm-hmm. or Jane was not used appropriately as a character. She fell into the bad version of Lois Lane that nobody likes, not the good version of Lois Lane that we all love. So it was interesting that for some reason, I get why they are doing it because I have heard from comic book readers that that is a very important thing that ends up occurring. And I guess really where my disappointment also stems from is I just really want to see Guardians team up with Thor and that be a movie.
Yeah. I think whenever we saw that Thor 4 and Tia was like, he was confirmed to come back and be a part of it. Everybody thought, you know, that was a possibility. And of course also when
James Gunn.
Yeah. When James Gunn was brought back, we would see Thor, you know, with the Guardians and stuff. So, I get where you're coming from. And maybe we'll still see Thor in Guardians Volume 3. And this is just a sort of bridge film for us to before we get to that point.
Yeah, actually, like, I feel like in a way, this theory, these announcements it's kind of like a bridge announcement mm-hmm. to give people, re-excite people and remind them that yes, Infinity War that saga has come to a close.
Yeah.
But we're still going to be making movies. There's still a lot more to tell or to come, and we have a lot more stories to tell. So in a way, I walked away from it feeling like it was incomplete. And so when I returned and I saw that Kevin Feige did explain that, no, we do have more movies that we're going to be making within the next few years, but he can't necessarily confirm right now when we're going to get Black Panther 2, when we're going to get Captain Marvel 2 or Guardians of the Galaxy 3, but we're going to get them along with Fantastic Four, along with some mutants. So like I felt like this isn't it. This isn't all of Phase 4. I really don't think so. I think there's going to be some announcements about 2022, mm-hmm. and then that's going to be in. Because I don't think that this is the Thor Love and Thunder is going to be the end of a group of films. That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense at all. It doesn't make. I mean, it does seem to be an offshoot of a building block towards a much larger thing. And maybe at the end of the day, you know, the next big team up kind of film will be the Secret Wars or, which was a big title back in the 80s for the Marvel comic universe. And so, or any other major saga that they will, you know, this phase 4 and potentially phase 5 will be.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is Feige is definitely not running out of toys to take off the shelf to change and add into this insert into this universe and tell a story, connect it to a few others and create an event.
Yeah.
And the man is not without his tricks. Because, good Lord, I'm sure I'm not the only one who literally walked away and was like, it's done. It's over. That's the last announcement. Only to come back and find out that they brought out Mahershala Ali, who nobody has been rumoring to be casted in the MCU. Yep. And definitely nobody was saying like, hey, they can now make a Blade movie, so you should cast the 2-time Academy Award winner.
Yep.
Who just slayed a True Detective season. No, but, you know, that's what Feige did.
That's exactly what he did. And I love it. It's, yeah, I mean, that was like, you know, you're so right. I mean, everybody was just like, first off, we thought we were going to get TV. Then we heard we were going to get 10 titles, and that's going to be it. And then he just boom, drops the mic on Saturday night. And I think nerddom everywhere, it was just... Everyone was happy. I mean, really.
Now, okay, The one thing I take offense to is I'm hearing a lot of people say perfect casting, best casting ever, never been a greater casting. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. What? It's a good cast, but still, I mean, what about Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man? Yes. What about Heath Ledger as the Joker? We have had very significant casting before. So,
and also don't disrespect Wesley Snipes.
Right. I mean, those movies scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Don't disrespect Wesley Snipes that way, because honestly, Blade, especially the first Blade, really was a foundational block, like Superman the movie and others that allowed for us to get to this point where we have the MCU. So people who are doing that, they're just disrespect. It's like, don't disrespect your elders. I mean, because you're doing that. And if you really, when I saw that they're going to be remaking Blade in the MCU, I was excited, but also I was just like, well, I got to go watch the original, because that was really, like you said, it was a super awesome kick-ass film.
And this is not going to be the same, because I had no idea that was based off of a comic book, because I'm a 90s kid. I'm not going into that movie being like, oh, this is a Marvel movie. I'm going in and being like, this is a vampire movie that is very scary and very gross and disgusting in some pieces. Okay. So that's a horror movie.
Yes, that one is indeed one.
Which, I mean, this Dr. is Strange. Interesting.
Yeah,
because
take a look at that one.
we add this other element, this more, like, great shout out, Dr. Strange X element of supernatural creatures into this universe. So I'm curious as how they're going to make that work, because you don't want to, you get to a point, and I'm sure we've always talked about this before, where everybody's special.
Yeah.
And how is that? Like, well, this person has a gene. Well, this person was bit by something. This person was bit by something else. And it's like, whoa, are there any normal people in your world anymore?
Right.
And that's why you need the people like Natasha in the fold, because it reminds you that there are still just the regular people, and that the Avengers or the character you're focusing on is truly unique, does have a true original story. So it'll be really interesting to see how they work in Blade into this universe.
Definitely, definitely. Looking forward to it, though.
Okay, so despite that long explanation, which it probably took us a half hour to go over an hour long announcement, there was some other news that dropped during San Diego Comic-Con. The Boys got renewed for season 2 without even having dropped a single episode.
Amazon is very judicious when it comes to that. I mean, I think they did it with Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and they did it with Jack Bryan. But other than that, they're not very – they don't hand these out. Unless they really, really feel like they have a hit.
And I think they do. Mm-hmm. I get the vibes from the critics that this show is going to really work. It is going to be a very interesting debate as to which show works more, The Boys or Watchmen on HBO, because they have very similar themes, different networks, and I don't know. I mean, I'll admit, a little more curious about The Boys right now than I am about Watchmen, because despite the trailers for Watchmen, which are really good trailers, the movie did not work for me. Mm-hmm. And the movie had a really good trailer.
It did.
So I'm remaining skeptical. While The Boys, it's not just that it's a good trailer. It looks fun. It looks different. Yep. It looks like counter programming to all of the other stuff that we're getting so inundated with.
Yeah, that's like, for example, that's why we love Doom Patrol so much. It's mm-hmm. because it went against the grain and the mold of what we've gotten used to.
Yep. Yep. And which also got renewed for a second season.
Yep.
Still holding out for Cloak and Dagger. Freeform.
Maybe. Yeah,
not Freeform, let us down.
Please. Maybe we'll get a word at D23 next month.
Maybe. Okay. Will, and now for the trailer you've been probably dying to talk about. We also got the full Picard trailer. Now, before you go into all of your fanboy about it, because I know you've been saving it and just waiting to unleash on this trailer. I watched it. Mm-hmm. I might actually watch it. But I could not help but notice how similar this story might be to the movie Logan. Mm. I mean, you're taking a character who we've seen thousands, like so many times. We know who he is. He's been on a lot of different properties. And then he suddenly is old, retired, and he encounters a girl mm-hmm. who he thinks he knows who she is, but he could be mistaken. And if he's right, she's in real danger. Interesting. And then he tries to be the bodyguard on a mission to take her to safety. I don't really know about that part. Yeah. It sounds really familiar.
It worked for Logan, and I think it's going to work in the Trek realm. I love this trailer. When I first heard a couple things. So I went into the San Diego Comic Con. People were like, no one from the Next Generation cast is also going to be in this new show. We're talking a fresh start. Is this going to be Picard? Is going to be after the events of J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, where it created which caused the divergence in the timelines in the original series and the new films. And so I was like, okay. And then I saw the trailer. And I saw Jerry Ryan at 709. And at the end, saw Brent Spiner back. And then, of course, got news about Will Jonathan Frakes returning as Will Riker and Deanna Troi, Marina Sirtis' character. And I was just in total nerdgasm and loved every minute of it. But the trailer itself, I thought it did a good job of setting up this new universe, and that we are taking an established character, like you said, who's been on thousands of hours of TV and film, and bringing it fast forward to this new journey. And so visually it got the Trekker in me, like, all excited, because Picard definitely is one of my favorite characters in science fiction. The story, as you eloquently put about how it gives you the Logan vibes, does for me as a Trek fan, I started thinking back when I saw that the Borg were being involved girl. And then one of the character, who was named Hugh, who was, I'm getting all fanboyish here, but he was the first Borg that we saw in Next Generation that actually, where his human side, where they were able to get him out of the collective. And so I'm thinking, my thought is that this girl is somehow connected to him, and that's because, of course, everybody also knows about 709 from Voyager, who was the character that was, who her human side was able to escape the collective. I'm thinking this girl is somehow connected to Hugh, and that's why Picard recognizes her and recognizes the danger that she's in, because the Borg is going to try to get them back for taking Hugh out, you know, 30 years ago, whenever it first happened on the show.
Yep. I mean, I think a lot of us are already thinking that that's what it is.
That's just my theory. But one other trailer that did happen with Star Trek this weekend also that was also equally exciting for me was seeing the Short Treks. Those are part of the lead. They did this last season with Star Trek Discovery, where they're little mini episodes that lead up to the actual season. And so there are six of them this upcoming lead up to Star Trek Discovery season 3, which took the series in a completely new place. And took the crew, and I won't spoil what happened for folks who haven't watched it yet, but just definitely check it out. But we get to see Spock again in one of the short treks, and it's actually when he first is assigned to the Enterprise with Captain Pike and Number One. And so I think three of the short treks are dealing with centered around Spock and Number One, who's played by Rebecca Romijn. And then the other three, I believe, are set with the with what happened with the Discovery from the events at the end of season two of that show. So I was also very excited about that for the Trek franchise, because the Star Trek Discovery truly was one of the highlight shows in 2019, other than what we talked about here as far as Doom Patrol and Krypton.
So the MCU fanboy in you was satisfied. The Star Trek fanboy in you satisfied. Will all of your dreams come true? So now I'm going to take the last 5 minutes of our podcast today to do a short review of Krypton Season 2, Episode 6, In Zod We Trust, because I, before getting on to the Twitter feed for Comic-Con, I watched this episode. So I was on a Krypton high and just wanting to know about news about Krypton. Didn't see any news about Krypton, so I wasn't satisfied, but hey, we can't have everything unless you're Will, apparently.
I get it all, yeah.
Good episode. Great episode. Very interesting how they bring up, they have a moral discussion at the very beginning. What did you see? Was it an execution? Was Jax being too aggressive? Was she doing the right thing, the wrong thing? Is Zod untrustworthy? Or is he just a villain who ended up having the one thing he cares most about taken away? So does that evoke sympathy? So a very interesting choice for me that the writers made, because I didn't expect them to have that debate right after. It also confirmed, no, Lyta is in fact dead.
Yeah.
This show, though, does still have time travel elements.
Not Lyta's dead. She's gone. I would be surprised if they revive her.
Then how does Zod ever get born?
They will resolve that. I'm telling you, it's in-game time game. It's in-game time travel rules. I don't know how they reconcile that point. Honestly, at this point, I really don't care.
Right. Like, in this timeline, she's dead.
Yeah.
Right.
In this timeline, she is. I think there will be some kind of like back-ended way that, because he's from a different timeline and was born in that timeline, this is how he basically still survives. But to your earlier question about Jax and her choice, I mean, it was a straight-up execution. And I loved the way that the show started whenever the reactions, because you just had a mute screen and you saw Segs just collapse in as a heap of just shock and like disbelief of what he had just watched. And nice little, you know, and Cameron Cuff, who plays Seg, did a nice little tribute to Superman's anguish when he found Supergirl, who dies in Crisis on Infinite Earths, another thing that's been like popping a lot this weekend, which we'll cover in future episode. But that was a nice little hat tip, and he does that a lot, in each, it seems like every, a few episodes where he ties something back to Superman. But, the anguish that he felt, Jaina, her, you know, trying to come to grips with, you know, such a duty bound creature in herself, and how seeing her daughter just, you know, viciously just executed there, and because, you know, her whole purpose in going on this expedition was trying to save Lyta, and of course she fails. And then Dev and his obviously anguish of like, once again, I've let Lyta down.
Well, I mean, to counter the opening of the show where everybody's discussing Jax's decision between Jaina, Dev, and Seg, you also have a discussion that occurs where who let her down, when, and why. Because all three of them you can blame. And see, it's usually what happens when somebody is murdered or somebody is killed like that. It's like suddenly becomes a question of like, whose fault is it? Mm-hmm. But there was a choice, and no, it's not like they held the blade or anything, but did they already lose her? Because again, we have the whole debate occur. Did she get reprogrammed, or is that really who Lyta is? Right. What actually happened between her and Drew when Seg left? Because there is an argument to be made. Like, we even see it in this episode where it was a nice parallel, how in this episode you see Seg break down emotionally, and by the end of it, he's aligned himself with Brainiac, because right. he knows the only way to defeat Drew Zod is to have a villain on his side who's equally, if not more powerful than Zod. Mm-hmm. So he kind of had to shut himself off emotionally, much like she might have made that decision, because she couldn't live with the grief of Seg's death.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's very good parallels, and I like the way Brainiac always, when he does reappear to Seg,
so cool.
It's always so cool, and it's always, you know, and when you were talking about the choices that they're making, Brainiac again, the logical, ruthless, cold computing individual that he is, points out the emotional, you know, all, you know, he's like all this anguish over one person.
Mm-hmm. But it's the conscience.
Yeah.
Like he has the way they are using him allows the viewers to really make you think, like, is Brainiac really Seg self-conscious? Because he does appear and does to tend to sound like you have two people, you're hearing two voices, or there's an angel and devil on your shoulders, and Brainiac's clearly the devil, where he's analyzing through a very biased perspective, like very analytically, and he knows that he needs to say certain things in order to get what he wants, because Seg is just a tool for him, much like how Brainiac is, which again, another parallel, this episode, it resumes that discussion about who's benefiting more here in this scenario. Like, clearly both of them need each other to get through this.
Yeah.
But which was already held when they were back on
Kalu. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love what they're doing with Brainiac.
Yeah.
It's just so fascinating.
It is. It is. And also Seg coming into the realization that in order to defeat Zod, he's going to, like you said earlier, have to, you know, he's realizing he can't do this without Brainiac. Go ahead.
I was just going to jump in and say, without evil on his side, which is another classic theme in this genre, where there's always that quandary, like, to kill or not to kill. Like, if you're a hero, do you actually kill people, or do you just put the bad guys away? Like, what are you going after more? And there's other dynamics where, well, if you align yourself with that person, then that's who you are. And so are you really the same hero that you have always claimed to be, or are you just as bad as that other person?
Right, right, right. Which, you know, again, and we see that dilemma come through with the Cylon this week.
Oh, that's stupid. Like, it's like he's not even on the same planet as everybody else. Or is that just me? It's like they shoot his footage and then they splice it in there. And I'm just like, are you still in the Phantom Zone? Like, what's going on here? It was really, despite my qualms about the Cylon, I do appreciate that the writers do end up making that decision to send Jax away.
Yeah.
Like, they don't kill her because that's not what they stand for. They don't give her over to Drew Zod because that's the death sentence. They let her go because although she probably did retrospectively do what was best for the resistance, it didn't morally align itself with what they stood for.
Exactly. And I think, and even though it frustrates us about Val, at least it does seem like he's disconnected from everything else, I found like this, it seems like this week he finally has found his moral, his voice, and that he did, he, there was a line that he was willing to go, and he realized that he had to do something very drastic in order to change the dynamic that's been going on here. And when Jax gave him the detonator to the space elevator, and he ultimately using it, and in order to basically give the rebellion a new life and a new hope to be able to defeat Zod, I think Val realized that, you know, impassioned speeches and those kind of things can only take us so far. I've got to get my hands dirty in order to save Kandor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He makes that decision. Seg aligns himself with Brainiac, which, before I forget, in season one, I did have a few moments of shipping Nissa and Seg, and what happens at the end of this episode, he tells her, only her, the truth about Brainiac and then asks for her help. She is going to help him because that's just Nissa. So it's very, very interesting scene for at least me and watching that. But you have that moment, and then you also have Drew Zod doing some doomsday hunting, mm-hmm. because again, it goes back to your point. Well, this episode is all about these central characters realizing that the way they originally wanted to win the game, they can't continue or else they'll lose. Yeah. So you have to go more offense than defense. Mm-hmm. So it was a very pivotal episode.
It was.
I didn't expect it to have so many big moments in it, especially right after the last episode. But, you know, that's what these writers understand. They understand momentum. They understand pace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So full speed ahead. Yeah. All right. That is it for us tonight. Will, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Will M. Polk. That's WILLMPOLK.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Cena Nerd. You can follow me on Twitter at
Jay Malmott.
I was there this weekend. At SJ Belmont, SJBELMONT. Please follow our crew on Twitter at Zena Nerd. Friend us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, but most importantly, rate, subscribe, and comment on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Spotify. Good night, geek out. You're welcome.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.